All right, everybody, welcome to another Borderless podcast. This is your host, James. Today I have a great podcast for you. It's with Ace Chapman from acechapman.com. And he does what is called a mini mogul style of e-commerce, buying and selling e-commerce stores. He's been really on the front line of this and doing well. He has a podcast with Justin Cook, which we've had on before, from Empire Flippers. And I think this is a really great opportunity for people that are looking for location-independent income, some other types of investments. There's a lot of underpriced deals that I've seen in the e-commerce space, and Ace Chapman is really the guy that to go for that. And so I hope you enjoy that. And before we get started, I did want to remind everybody to please go over to borderlessblog.com. Lots of information on there. If you're new to the show, please sign up for the mailing list. And if you are trying to create a borderless life for yourself, then, you know, possibly I can help you. You can go to borderlessblog.com. If you sign up for the mailing list, you'll get a free call, or you can just find me on Clarity. And as far as moving overseas, getting location-independent income, vacation rentals, all these types of things that we talk about on the podcast, I have lots of contacts, and I do coaching calls with people. So go over there, and hopefully I can help you out. So once again, if you enjoy the show, please give us a review and I will read it on the podcast. So without further ado, here's the 102nd episode.
Welcome to the Borderless Podcast, your guide to traveling, investing, and living beyond borders, where we talk about living the life that you want to live, where you want to live it.
All right, everybody. Today on the line, we have Ace Chapman with us from acechapman.com. He is a business acquisition consultant, and his company has bought over 150 revenue-generating websites that are viewed by millions of people a year. He's also the co-host of the Web Equity Show with Justin Cook, which we've had on the podcast, and he's from Empire Flippers. And that's actually where I heard him. I listened to the Web Equity Show. I'd really recommend it to people that are interested in buying and selling e-commerce websites. They really go through from buying to selling all the different steps, and both of them are experts at that. So it was kind of funny because I was listening to that. Because I haven't actually done a e-commerce deal myself, but I was listening to it, getting all the information on that podcast, and I looked at some more of Ace Chapman stuff, and then funny enough, I was walking down the street in Medellin, and there was Ace Chapman, right? And so I reached out to him. I said, "Hey, Ace," and he's and so anyways, and we hung out there. We had a blast in Medellin, and so it was very cool to meet him, and it's amazing to have him on the show. So first of all, thanks for joining me on the Borderless Podcast, Ace.
Really great to be here, James. I love talking about this stuff. It was awesome getting to meet you. I actually hung out at one of the restaurants that we went to. So it was good to have. I was just landing in Medellin. It was great to have a host that knew a little bit about the city and could kind of show me around a bit. So yeah. I appreciate that.
So, yeah. So, I mean, you are a jet setting guy. You're always around all over the place. So you're really enjoying Medellin there, no?
Yeah. So left for a little bit. Now, it's funny enough, we happened to schedule the podcast a couple of days after I had gotten back in Medellin. So I'm back down here and getting to connect with some expats and digital nomads and that whole scene. So I love it. It's an amazing city.
It's got a nice scene there. Yeah, for sure. So funny enough, I definitely wanted to bring you on here because actually I did a poll of the audience a while ago on some different topics for the podcast. What would you like to see? What direction would you like the show to go? And one of the options was, I'm trying to remember how I worded it, but it was something like e-commerce mini mogul style, business entrepreneur or something like that. Mm-hmm. So anyways, e-commerce mini moguls. And that was by far the thing that people were most interested. So my audience is very interested in what you have to say. I think that you coined that phrase, right? The mini mogul e-commerce. Yeah. But you've been into all kinds of businesses. I know you bought your first business. I think you're 19. You've been in the stock market, worked in corporate America. You built a multi-million dollar real estate business, also owned retail stores. And now you concentrate on e-commerce, this mini mogul style. And so maybe if you could let us know what it is about e-commerce that you like over all these others that you've worked in, and what exactly does a mini mogul strategy look like?
Yeah, yeah. So the very first deal that I bought was the thing that changed my life. You know, I was studying political science. I saw getting into government as a way to give back and have a positive impact on the world. That view has obviously changed a lot because of a lot of reasons. And so I'm very glad that I didn't end up going that route. I had a business that I was a customer of and reached out to them and ended up, instead of what my original goal was, which was to become an intern, found out they wanted to sell the business and convinced them to allow me to do my first little tiny leverage buyout, leveraging $3,000 I had into buying this $70,000 business. And that was the first time I had the realization that you could just buy income, that you don't have to go and try to get a job to get income. You don't have to try to build something from scratch and get income. Just like you buy a house, you buy a car, just every other asset in your life, you can buy income. So that changed the trajectory of my life. And after that, I got into a mortgage, bought a mortgage company, bought, like you said, a few retail businesses, bought a franchise. That's the We Buy Ugly House franchise. So that's how I ended up getting into real estate and everything. You know, I've done tanning salons. And what I realized in doing all of those offline businesses was, bottom line is, compared to the first deal I did, it was a lot more headache. I mean, the first business was a lot more passive. We're generating money, whether I was like hustling or not, didn't necessarily depend on employees to show up in the morning and open up the doors and be nice to customers and make sure the place is clean and all these little tiny things, and even paying, you know, rent and just all the overhead that comes with owning an offline business. All of that, more than just even the money, equals headaches. Having to have those employees on site, having to deal with signing a lease and utilities and all of those things just increase the you know, the psychic RAM that you have to use to run that business. So in the meantime, of me doing these offline deals, I had done some small internet businesses, and online, I just saw that the return was higher on a percentage basis, even though I had a lot more money tied up, and it was generating a lot more money with offline businesses. The cash flow was a lot more incredible from the internet. So I basically let go of all of the, I started selling my real estate, started selling my offline businesses, and decided to double down about 9 years ago, just doing internet-based businesses. So ever since then, we've done everything from SaaS, you know, software as a service businesses, obviously e-commerce, like you mentioned, you know, with even within that, things like FBA, fulfilled by Amazon businesses, content deals, affiliate deals. So all these different types of businesses. And bottom line is, I realized that there was this potential to build a diversified flow of income, which is really what you need. There's a couple of things that are crucial to have a sustainability in your income. And one of those is just having a diversified source of income.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's something that I really believe in, this online business thing, especially for people that are looking to have some freedom in their life, because I can't think of any, you know, type of business that is available now where you get as much freedom as you do with these online businesses. Another benefit is the, you know, there are some tax strategies that you can use with e-commerce. We can get into that, but that's another benefit. And I think that probably a lot of people are, you know, wondering about, really, e-commerce? I mean, I know that, you know, Amazon is growing, but you know, is there other, all these other businesses that are available? I wanted to go through some stats I dug up here. So it looks like in the last 10 years, the number of people using the internet has grown by 600%. It's estimated that there will be more than 3 billion people. There are more than 3 billion people now with access to the internet. These numbers are only growing. It's estimated that by 2020, there will be 5 billion people online. In the United States alone, the market for just ebooks was worth $270 million in 2008. By 2014, that has already grown to $5.69 billion. If you do the math, that averages over 250% growth a year. So And what's even better is that this number could grow to $8.69 billion by 2018. So, you know, this is there's definitely a lot of people going into this area of e-commerce. More and more people are buying things online. It might seem from the vantage point of somebody that lives in the United States or especially in one of the big cities that, oh, now, you know, everybody's, this is kind of saturated, but it's definitely not. This is a growing space. It's, you know, the way I look at e-commerce, it's almost like buying real estate in a country or in a city where everybody wants to be, you know, and that's cyberspace, right?
That's exactly it. Yeah. And the cool thing about kind of this mini mogul strategy within that is, you know, you compare it to an asset like Bitcoin. Mm. And right now we're at 1% of 1% of 1% of people even like knowing that you can buy these little pieces of the internet that are generating income. And so when you think about the people that have actually bought deals, it's way less than the number of people that were buying Bitcoin at even $10. Wow. And so the idea is that, you know, I had a guy who's works on Wall Street and this just joined my coaching program. He's like, the interesting thing to him is there's starting to see softness in the space for real estate and, you know, the stock market and a lot of that. And when you look at our space, like the multiples just are the demand and like the speed that people are buying things, all the measurements that you look at for, okay, are things slowing down? You know, when you're looking at real estate, all right, it's not that things just go off a cliff instantly, but okay, instead of things selling after being 90 days on the market, now they're selling at 98 or 100, you know, 10, whatever. And in our space, I mean, just things are selling faster and for more money. And part of that is just the increase of people being aware that this is even a possibility. So that's one of the things that gets me excited. You know, the numbers that you're talking about, that's growing at such an immense rate. But then in addition to that, the fact that, you know, like a Bitcoin or any asset where people just don't know anything about it, as that awareness increases, that increases the multiples.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, you know, if you want to get into, you know, real estate, for instance, and you live in Phoenix, okay, you're going to run around and try to find a good deal in Phoenix. I mean, you know how much competition and how many people are trying to do the exact same thing that you are? To actually find a deal is a lot of hard work. Well, you know, why not improve your chances? You can go somewhere, you know, like these types of businesses that, you know, most investors have no idea how to even value. They don't even know, you know, where to buy them, where to sell them, how to grow them and all this type of stuff. And so it's kind of a market where you can more easily find deals. There's not as much competition, the way I look at it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So exactly. I'm sure there's a lot of people, you know, that maybe, you know, they their eyes glaze over, they tune out because they think that, you know, they're not tech savvy and there's no way that they can do something like this. What would you respond to someone that thinks that?
For a lot of people, it's not right for them. Mm. You know, one of the things that we do in my program is we want to get them working in a deal before they buy a deal. I think a lot of people do make the mistake of not knowing anything about this, and it puts you at a huge disadvantage. We see people all the time that come in, they don't know how to structure a deal, they don't know how to do due diligence, they pay all cash for a deal, which is just the worst thing you could ever do. And they come, a lot of them will find me after they've already done the deal. And they're like, hey, this thing has dropped to zero and isn't making money or even half in value. And for a lot of folks that put half of their life savings into something, that's a crucial mistake. And so what we encourage people to do is dip their toe in the water. The way that we do that is by allowing them to partner on the deals that I buy in a small way and helping to run those deals. Because there's no better way to be able to sit across the table or sit on the phone with the seller and talk about a deal, know how to structure that deal, know what to look for in due diligence, and know how to run the business, most importantly, after you buy it, than to have run that business before. If you haven't, you're going to be at a disadvantage. And so just being a part of a deal and seeing, okay, this is how this works. It's almost a that's always been one of the things where I, at the beginning of my career, was having to walk through in the dark and bump into things and mess up things and then correct. And that's one way to do it. But it's costly. It costs a lot more money and it costs a lot more time. You know, I wish 10 years ago, even let alone 19, you know, when I 19 years ago, I bought my very first deal, but I would take knowing what I know today, even 10 years ago, it just took me a real long time. I had to own a bunch of offline businesses and own some online businesses to be able to say, oh, this is why this is better. Nobody was teaching this. Nobody was talking about it. I had to, you know, a lot of things that sound obvious, you know, when I bought my very first deal, they were still saying that the internet was a fad. So a lot of those things that are obvious now were not so obvious then. And so you want to take that to the next level of, you know, just becoming a true expert at this before you're throwing a ton of money in it. But the great thing is that, again, all the knowledge is out there. It's just so, you know, everything that we had to learn by doing years ago. You know, people are talking about online, how to build an e-commerce store, how to grow it, how to run it, all of that.
Yeah. Now I had Jordan Stanley Payne, who's a guy who talks a lot about real estate investing. I've had him on the show before, and he talks a lot about doing it with no money down. He's big on showing people how to do real estate deals with no money down, which most people would think is impossible. I've noticed that you've got some stuff out there, you know, the same, talking about doing e-commerce with no money down. Like, so can you explain how somebody would go about doing that, at least in general? How can somebody get into a deal with no money down?
Yeah, let's talk about two recent deals that we've done. One of them was an e-commerce business. That one was most of the product was sold on Amazon. It did a little bit of sales from its own Shopify store. But in that business, what we decided to do was get an SBA loan. So my client negotiated to do the SBA loan. We started working with the bank, and long story short, structured the deal so that his down payment was the working capital in the business. And so essentially all he did was transfer it was $1 million, about $1.1 million, and his down payment was 10%. So he basically took $100,000 that was in one account and transferred it to his other business account now. And that was his down payment. So it was, you know, a no money down deal. Another one that we did recently was an inventory based deal. So this was a business that just had a ton of inventory. The guy was pouring a lot of money into another business and basically got caught kind of taking from Peter to pay Paul in his businesses, and had too much money spent in one business, couldn't re-up on the inventory on another business to keep that one growing, and so needed to sell. And so what we end up doing is said, hey, you know, we're going to pay you later. Our down payment is going to have to go to just us buying this inventory. And the neat thing was we were able to structure a pretty low payment on the inventory from the Chinese manufacturer, and was able to get a loan because that percentage of the inventory was so low. So that one worked out to be a no money down deal. And it's just infinite. So every deal is a little bit different, how you negotiate it. I tell people all the time, this isn't even due diligence. There's no aspect of this that is a science, because if it were, then you just follow those scientific rules and get a great deal every single time. But that's just not how business at any level works. If you could start a business and follow the rules and it's definitely going to work, then everybody would do it and make lots of money. But we know that that's not the case. And so what you have to bring to the table is that little bit of art. So the same way that you can't read a book and be able to do a painting, you've got to practice. You have to do the same thing when it comes to doing these deals and thinking about, okay, how would I structure a deal like this?
Right. No, I love it. That sounds amazing. And you know, I know that also. I don't think that the businesses that you deal with, you don't start any of them yourself, right?
Yeah, exactly. So okay. I don't start businesses at all.
Right. And can you tell us why that is?
Yeah, it's a lot around just the statistics and numbers. If you look at the likelihood that a business is going to fail, then and you look at what you have to invest in that business to find out, just to find out if it's going to fail or not, because that's all you're doing. When you start a business, all you're doing is trying to figure out, is this going to work or not? And in order to do that, you've got to invest your time. So you got to take time away from your family, time away from your job, if you have one right now, time away from other things that could be generating income. And then you've got to invest some amount of money, even if it's a small amount. And even if it's just learning, you know, you got to learn what you're going to do first, and then you've got to actually implement it. And then you've got to invest in gaining that knowledge. So got the money and you've got the time in the business, and then you've got either time to get the knowledge, hiring somebody to get the knowledge, whatever. So in order to find out if this thing is going to work or not, you've got to outlay all of that. And it's basically being a venture capital. Once you've decided to invest in doing a startup, you are a venture capitalist. Now, venture capitalists understand something when they put together a fund. They know that close to 90% of those things are going to turn into nothing, that they're not going to get any return off of those. And they bank that, hey, out of those, you know, we're going to get 5% that are or that do really, really well, and then we're going to get another 5% that turn into Uber. And we're willing to take that gamble. But they're dealing with a ton of money that they're taking that gamble with, and they know that they're going to have this outrageous failure rate with the fact that they know all of the other great startups. You know, we're talking about those kind of failure rates are what some of the best venture capital funds have out there. And those funds know Mark Zuckerberg. You know, they've invested with Mark Zuckerberg. They know the guys at Google. They know YouTube. They have access to Instagram. I mean, they have the networks that are just absolutely unbelievable. And they still, with all the knowledge that you could ever imagine, with all the access, you could never dream of the access that they have. And they still know that they're going to have this incredible failure rate. And so what I prefer is, I know that even with the businesses that are making money, there's going to be a 50% failure rate. So that's after you're good and you're making money. So I want to try to find the best of those businesses that are already making money and build a diversified portfolio of those businesses. Because I know that even some of those, you know, right now we've got about an 8% failure rate overall. I try to do my planning and projections based off of 25% failure rate. And with that portfolio, it's going to generate a certain amount of income, because for my time and my money, I want to get paid if I spend it. If I'm not spending it hanging out with you and Medellin and just having fun and I've got to do some work, then I want to spend it trying to figure out how I can structure a deal on something that's going to, that day that I take it over, start to make money. And so I'm getting a return on my most important asset, which is my time, because I don't want to spend my time on earth trying to find out if something is going to work and playing venture capital with my time.
Right. It's our most valuable asset, right? Our time. So
yeah.
I also noticed that when you go into buying a business, you have an idea of, well, you have a strategy of how you're going to sell it. A lot of people don't do that. They go and buy a business or start a business thinking that they're going to have it forever. But you eventually want to sell it, which I think is actually the right way to think about it in your exit strategy. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, why you do that.
Yeah, one part is the strategy, and the other part is actually starting to sell it. So we start very early on working with people that we feel like could be great buyers for any asset that we buy. And part of that is just building a relationship, just to say, hey, like, we're in this industry, we feel like, you know, eventually we're going to sell this asset, or just saying, hey, we want to work with you. We want to have, you know, some camaraderie and partnerships and that kind of thing. And so we figure out who would be not just somebody who's interested in the business, but who would this business be more valuable to than the business is worth to a financial buyer. So you have two types of buyers, strategic buyers and financial buyers. Financial buyer, at the end of the day, all they care about is cash flow. When I'm buying, 90% of the time, I am a financial buyer, but we do deals sometimes where there's a strategic advantage. And even in those cases, I'm still really going to buy based on being a financial buyer, but understand that, oh, wow, like, this is awesome because I have this big bonus that I'm going to be able to cross promote these two deals and make more money from both of them. So all of that is taken into consideration. But what we want to do is find that strategic buyer that feels like, wow, if I can buy this thing, it's worth 5x to me, even though it's only worth 3x to you, because it complements my business in a way that I'm going to be able to make money from both of, make more money from both these than you can. So right. We start building that relationship early on. And it's interesting because one of the reasons that I'm spending some time in Medellin right now is talking to a guy who owns a business here that is a strategic business for us to buy. So I do it on both ends. Reached out to him maybe 3 months ago, and that was the first conversation. He's like, no, definitely not interested in selling, you know. And then later reached out, like, okay, like, eventually I'm gonna sell, but I'm not ready yet. But, you know, we can start talking and figuring out, hey, how can you make your business more valuable to me? Because I'm willing to pay for that. If I'm, you know, this another misconception is that my goal is to get the cheapest thing. And you know, my goal is to get the best thing and the best deal. So if you make your business more valuable and there are better systems in place and I don't have to come in there and build those, then I'm willing to compensate you. Because like we talked about, like, I don't want to, if I don't have to invest my time in that and you're willing to invest your time, I'll pay you all day long. Mm-hmm. So building that relationship early on where this deal may not sell for another year, and we are building that relationship so that when he does sell, he knows that he's not going to get a better deal from anybody else than us. And we've got a great relationship. And, you know, all of that is there. We already understand the business. Most of the due diligence is done. He's not having to convince somebody, go to market, take those risks. All that stuff is there. So on both ends, it's funny because I'm doing the same thing on both sides. Like you said, on the sales side, I'm planning for the exit. But not just like planning and getting the business ready for the exit, but also finding out from my potential buyers, how would this business be most valuable to you? So we're not spending our wheels doing things that aren't going to increase the value of the business. And then at the same time, I'm going out and being that buyer to other businesses.
Right. Well, that's interesting. So you don't necessarily look for an excellent deal, but you look for a high quality deal. That's kind of, you know, a lot different than most people. You know, they want to really find, you know, as far as price goes, you know, something that's underpriced for the market. Yeah, exactly. And all that kind of stuff. So, so that's a different approach. And that's actually, yeah, I mean, that's obviously a key to this, you know, is finding these high quality deals that are, you know, decent. So is there any advice or how do you go about finding these type of high quality deals?
So you know, one of the things is just strategic value like if you don't have any other deals, then it would be your skill set. So talking about strategic, let's say you have started a business. My first thing would be, what are the businesses that are either before they have the things before they get to my business? Let's say like it's manufacturing. They have access to the customers on the other end. You know, they're going to bring some strategic value. So I'm looking at what businesses would have things that my business needs, whether it's the products, the customers, the employees, you know, it's whatever, expertise. You know, we're buying an agency right now because we got so many deals and we pay agencies a lot of money. So why don't we buy one? So you're looking at those kinds of things. If you're coming at it and you've never done a deal before, you want to start approaching folks that have valuable businesses in the area of expertise that you're in. So, and then it just becomes an outreach kind of thing. It definitely becomes becoming that, working that hustle muscle and doing some outreach, going to the conferences. Let's say you're focused on e-commerce and that's your thing. Go to the e-commerce conferences and start to build those relationships. Like I mentioned, and it's appropriate that you asked about deal flow right after that other question, because what most people are doing is they're like, oh, I don't know how to get deal flow because I talked to 5 people and they didn't want to sell. It's like, well, what do you mean they didn't want to sell? That doesn't matter. Either their business is going to eventually go out of business, they're going to sell, or the person's going to pass away. Like something's going to happen with that business. So there's no such thing as like, oh, they don't want to sell. Like, no, they just don't want to sell right now. Mm-hmm. So every business is an amazing lead. It's just a matter of, are you willing to invest and buy that plane ticket back down to Medellin and spend some money on dinners and drinks and all of that and build that relationship with that potential seller? So that when they do sell, it's not today, it's not next month, it may be 2 years from now, but I have sellers all the time, whether it's people that we've bought businesses from before, or people that we got bid out on deals before, or people that I just reach out to through you know, connections or directly. All of those people are potential deals that end up coming back to us, and not all of them will. But if you're talking to 20 people, one of them will definitely come back to you.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, basically, you know, networking, relationships, building relationships, rapport with people, you know, that's great. Very, very important stuff. I was going to mention there's a guy, Zach Slayback, who came on the show before. He writes a lot about, well, different types of things. But lately, I noticed he wrote a few posts about networking in general, and that he thinks that going to networking events is probably the worst type of networking you can do. And it's like, if you want, like, for networking, you got to have something that you have in common with people. You got to have some way to get in touch with people that you have something other to do than just to talk about networking and or business or whatever. So I'm wondering, you know, are there any strategies or you know, how do you go about network with people or finding building these type of relationships?
So my main goal whenever I'm building these relationships is, how can I have a mutual beneficial relationship now? You know, just talking to somebody, going through the motion, figure out, are we going to do something eventually or not? You know, it's trying to figure out, hey, what do you need? Mm-hmm. What does your business need right now? And I think that's something that a lot of people make a big mistake on. Mm-hmm. They aren't so much trying to figure out, like, hey, what can we do? It's just, can I get something from you?
Right.
And that's why those networking events are so annoying. Mm-hmm. It's like everybody's looking around, okay, how can I get something from you, as opposed to how can I be beneficial to you? And when you have that attitude, I think that changes everything.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Yeah, great. And so, I mean, you've been doing really well. If everybody, you know, has a chance, definitely go over to acechapman.com if this interests you. He's got a lot of blog posts, a lot of information there. He offers, you got a buyer readiness test here, acquisition program, you do coaching, all this type of stuff. Is there anything else maybe that you got coming down the pike that you're working on that people should know about?
Yeah, so you know, I definitely say if you're in stuff, the buyer's readiness test is a neat thing to go ahead and do. Mm-hmm. But in general, I think the thing that I would be doing is looking at businesses that are on the market, because that's a great way to learn what's going on. So that would be the one tip that I'd say, regardless if you're going to buy a business today or never buy a business, you know, start looking at what's on the market. And if you have questions about deals, feel free to reach out. You can email me directly. It's ace@acechapman.com.
Awesome. Now, a lot of times I do ask one question for people, and that is, you know, if people are listening to this, maybe they have a regular job, but they're trying to venture out into becoming an entrepreneur, an investor, maybe living overseas or something like that. What's the best piece of advice that you could give them?
Yeah, a little bit at a time. You know, I think just because we see so much success, this is the first time that like success is being advertised so blatantly across to everybody as if it's just this easy thing to attain. And the truth is, it's just not. And so setting, sometimes turning off the noise, turning off the Instagrams and all of that, and setting little goals for yourself is the most powerful thing that you can do, and celebrating those small things, not instantly becoming this ultra millionaire.
Right, right. All right, very good. Well, awesome. And again, everybody go check him out, acechapman.com. And also, they have the podcast, and that is the Web Equity Show. You can find that. Definitely recommend checking that out. They really walk you through everything from A to Z, what you need to do. And so, yeah, thanks so much. And good luck on your deal there in Medellin that you're working on.
Thanks so much for having me, James.
Thanks for joining us for the Borderless Podcast. Traveling, investing, and living beyond borders.